I feel like college tennis, unfortunately, is not where it used to be. Like, when I first got into it, I feel like it was really fun. Like, it was more about, like, developing the players. It was more about the relationships. You know, there's cutting all these programs, and it's just become so much about money, right? I've enjoyed competing at tennis at so many different levels, and now at pickleball. And I can honestly say, like, pickleball is just so much more fun than tennis. I mean, I know people give me crap about that, but when you go out and play pickleball, it's so much more fun, right? The rallies are so much more entertaining. There's so many more shots you can hit. It's so much more social, right? Different groups of people playing together, different levels. So for me, pickleball has just been an amazing second opportunity to play another pro sport.
Tyler DeHart, welcome to the Behind the Paddle podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, I haven't seen you on many podcasts before, and I think
been on many podcasts.
It's a disservice to all of your global worldwide fans out there that want
right?
They want more Tyler DeHart content, and you're just not giving it to them.
I know, exactly. Behind the Paddle.
So the whole idea here is for people to get to know you. What brought you into pickleball? What were you doing prior? What was the moment you first found pickleball? Really just to get a sense of your backstory and everything that led to where you are now. So when did you first start playing?
My memory is horrible for like dates and stuff, but I know it was during COVID. You know, like so many other people, I was actually working at the USDA. I could go as far back as you want, but I was a college coach for 7 years for men's tennis. I was at Alabama for 4 seasons and then Florida State for 3 seasons. And then I left that to go to USDA at the national headquarters in Lake Nona. So I was there for only less than a year. And then COVID hit and they had to lay off a lot of coaches like me. My job was to bring in some of the top juniors, tennis players, like 14, 15 year olds. And, you know, nobody could fly. We're all in lockdown. So my wife, Megan, and I, we were watching, you know, stuff on social media. We were like everybody else, like, what are we going to do with our lives? You know, like sitting around in our house, trying to do fitness challenges, trying to find fun stuff to do. And then we saw all these people online playing pickleball. And we're like, what the heck is this? Like, I had played pickleball a few times, but it was like in a retirement community. Like my friend, like I had no idea how to play. I didn't even come to the net. I didn't know what I was doing. And so we watched some of these videos and we decided to tape up a court in our driveway. It was like a mini court and we started hitting around, messing around and playing. And it was really fun. And, you know, the neighbors were kind of like, what is this sound? They came over and some of them were watching us play. But that was like really the first time we like, we're like, what is pickleball? Right. And then we started playing after that.
Yeah, so that's almost like a classic, you know, recreational player story where it's COVID, kind of stuck, order a set online, play in the driveway. That's cool. Where, you know, that's not everybody's story. It feels like that's everybody's story that's an amateur player, but not a pro player. So
right.
Pretty unique and cool.
I kind of started as an amateur, I guess. but my wife and I, you know, we both played college tennis at Illinois. We always say that tennis is kind of the cheat code for pickleball, as we know. So we picked it up pretty quick. We started playing and kind of were like, man, this is really fun. It was like one of the few things you could do during COVID. So I feel like a lot of people, that's where it kind of gained a lot of popularity. I was happened to be, like I said, at USDA headquarters and they had a PPA there. And so we ended up like playing 4 or 5, I think it was 4 or 5 mixed, you know, like let's play a tournament. Why not? We hadn't really even played that much, but we kind of started to figure out how to play the right way. And I think we actually won that tournament. Like I think we won in 3 games in the final. Like it was a battle.
Grind.
And we were grinding. We play on these temp courts on the backside of the USTA, like where they play the college tennis matches.
Yeah.
And then we wandered over one day to the pro courts. I went by myself. I was like, "What is this all about?" And I went over there and I saw like Ben Johns and Tyson McGuffin and all these guys, the big names. And I was like, "Dang, these guys are pretty good." Like, and I was like, "Okay, this is like a legit sport. Like, this is pro." I was like,
Yeah.
"Okay." So then I kind of like could see what pro pickleball looked like. And then I think from that point on, I think my competitive juices started flowing and I watched these guys for a little bit. Then I started watching all these videos and I was like, you know what? I think I can do this. Like, I was like, I think if I practice for a little bit, I can figure this out. So then we
Yeah.
kind of got more serious about it.
Love it. And what's been the biggest struggle, I guess, going from that point where you were like, okay, I think I can do this pro thing. Was it like a immediate, okay, I'm gonna start training and I'm gonna start making this a real thing, or is it kind of more of a gradual, like, find my way? Like, what was that process?
Yeah, well, I think it was tough for us because at that point, you know, I was basically then getting laid off from USTA. I had left Florida State for that job. We moved our whole family. It was kind of like a tough situation. It turned out to be kind of a blessing in disguise because we probably would have never started playing pickleball and doing all that. But then we kind of had to figure out what we were going to do. Megan, I think, instantly was like into it. She has kind of an obsessive personality, so she like dived right in. But like in our transition period, we had to like pay the bills, right? So
Yeah.
we moved to Clearwater and we decided just to go somewhere that we wanted to live where we had friends and stuff like that. And we started doing like some odd jobs. So kind of pickleball was on the back burner for a little bit, but we still were like playing with friends and kind of practicing and training a little bit. But I was still, you know, I had to still coach tennis to pay the bills. I was kind of doing some private lessons. Megan got an insurance job with Farmers Insurance Agency out in California doing remote work for them. I was literally like knocking door to door doing like solar sales.
Let's go.
I swear, my friend had a security systems company. He let me do some jobs with them. So I was like going around with this guy, this technician, working with them, kind of learning the business on that side of things. And then I was doing lessons. And then tennis kind of always sucks you back in the tennis
Yeah.
lessons. So I started getting more and more lessons. And then, you know, I was still playing pickleball, but it was like, I gotta make money, right?
Yeah.
And then Megan did the insurance job for like, I think it was like a year and a half or something like that. And she was playing more and more pickleball, playing more tournaments. I was playing a few here and there, but mostly like money balls and stuff like that. Not a lot of pro, a few pro tournaments.
Yeah.
But then I was kind of watching her and she was, you know, I think she made the finals of singles in like her first pro tournament in like Punta Gorda. I don't even know where it was. It was, yeah. And you know, I was like, okay, she just made like 2,000 to 3,000 bucks. I was like, dang, that's pretty good prize money. Like, that's gonna take me a
Yeah.
lot of hours on court teaching tennis to make that much money. And so I think in that year, I don't even know what year this was. I think it was like 2 years ago where I just started teaching a little less. At that point, I was doing mostly tennis and Megan was doing pickleball. And then I was like trying to play pickleball in tennis and it was kind of difficult. And then I was like, okay, I think I'm gonna start, you know, focusing a little more on pickleball. And that's when we kind of both went all in to pickleball, started playing all the APP tournaments, and just taking it a lot more seriously. So
Yeah.
that was the logistics was the biggest challenge in the beginning, I think. Just believing that we could actually make a living doing this, right? Because it was
Yeah.
like, you know, we didn't know anything about pickleball, but we came in at a really good time, right? Where we could like, it was kind of booming. You know, the sponsorship opportunities were there. The prize money was getting better and the competition wasn't as steep yet. I mean, it's
Yeah.
getting more and more steep as we know each year, but it was a great time that we came in. And then for me, just like pickleball wise, you know, like any other tennis player, I had to learn the soft game. I had to learn the dinking, all this stuff that we just never really did as a tennis player. But I grew up playing a ton of mini tennis. I had like an all court game. I love doubles, you know, serve and volleyed a lot. I like playing grass, stuff like that. So I kind of had like this game that transitioned fairly easily over to the game of pickleball,
Yeah.
but I still had to figure out the dinking and all the nuances of the game, you know, all the
Yeah.
things that you do really well, I didn't know how to do. I had a good
So,
drive, I had good volleys, all this stuff,
yeah.
but my soft game wasn't great.
Yeah, and I played not tennis to your level, but I played pretty like the definition of winning ugly. I would like
Exactly,
chip
yep.
a chip short, chip, you know, slice short, make somebody come in. Hit a
Right.
slow passing shot cross court or a lob over their back shoulder. Just like just
Yeah.
trashy, trashy tennis. So pretty similar to like how I play now. Nothing big.
Right.
But
perfect for pickleball.
Yeah, perfect for pickleball. Just junky good hands though.
That's the same with my wife too, with Megan. I mean, it's like her tennis game was literally the perfect game for pickleball. Like, you know, she just had like a slice forehand. Like she grew up in red clay in Germany and had like two-hand forehand, all this stuff, but she was struggling when she came over to play on hard courts, indoor fast hard courts.
Yeah.
So she switched to like slice forehand, and then she like came in, she volleyed. She basically played like a guy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Not to be sexist or anything.
But not just a baseliner.
She wasn't just a baseline banger. So like those are the kind of tennis games that I feel like translate well.
Yeah. Pickleball. Do you miss the tennis aspect? Because you were doing the college coaching for D1s, for high level, you know, major D1 schools, and then kind of a high level performance coach at USTA. Do you miss that aspect of it, or are you fully entrenched in the pickleball life now?
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, people have asked me that question many times, and it's, you know, it's I do miss some aspects of tennis, obviously. I feel like college tennis, unfortunately, is not where it used to be. Like when I first got into it, I feel like it was really fun. Like it was more about like developing the players. It was more about the relationships. Like, you know, it's like when you played college tennis, when we played, it was like, you remember those road trips, you remember going out there and battling for your team and putting it on the line and just all those amazing experiences. And now I feel like, you know, with the NIL stuff and just the way that college sports has gone lately, I just feel like it's, you know, there's cutting all these programs and it's just become so much about money. Right. And so that part of it, I feel like I kind of got out of college tennis looking back at a decent time. Like, I don't think I would go back just because I feel like it's gotten so diluted with all of this other crap that I don't really like, you know? And for me, it's always been about, I mean, I'm a coach, like, I'm a player, you know, I've enjoyed competing at tennis at so many different levels and now at pickleball. And I can honestly say like pickleball is just so much more fun than tennis. I mean, I know people give me crap about that, but you know, like you have this whole feud between tennis and pickleball and all this stuff. But it's like when you go out and play pickleball, and it's also like my age, obviously I'm 40, but like, but you go out there and play and it's so much more fun, right? The rallies are so much more entertaining. There's so many more shots you can hit. You know, it's like, it's so much more social, right? There's more people. I feel like it crosses boundaries better than tennis does as far as like different groups of people playing together, different levels, all of these sort of things. So for me, pickleball has just been an amazing second opportunity to play another pro sport, you know, and it's like, and now that pickleball is being taken seriously and we're, you know, making a living doing this, it's just, I mean, it's crazy. Like we pinch ourselves daily. Just like, wow, how are we doing this playing pickleball? Like, we live in an RV and travel around. I'm in my RV right now, and that's all we do, right? And it's like, my wife has taken my daughter, Lily, to a all-women's event at APP in Columbus. I'm here with JR. He's building some Legos over there. But but it's like, you know, it's just been such an amazing journey for us to be able to do this. And I miss some parts of tennis, but I guess the short answer is I love pickleball now, and it's like, it's become our lifestyle, right? It's like our whole world, so we love it.
Yeah. And you mentioned JR and Lily, and it's cool because they also are really entrenched in the game now. Like they're, you know, you're training with them. They're hitting all the time. They're always at tournaments. They're playing their own events now, which I'm sure is a lot to manage as for you guys, for you and Megan, as both players, but also parents trying to support the kids and make sure you're watching their matches and helping them. What's that balance been like of really obviously wanting to win and compete, you know, to your best ability. But also understanding there's a bigger macro picture of you guys are parents and this is JR and Lily's life and wanting them to grow and learn and grow up as good kids.
Yeah, no, that's what it's all about for me. I mean, having the kids doing this has been amazing for me. Like, I think that's been the most fun part of pickleball is just the fact that we can all do it as a family. You know, we're fortunate that we have fun numbers as a family, right? It's my wife and I, and then we have a boy and a girl, and they're similar ages. They're only 20 more months apart. So JR just turned 8 and Lily's going to be 10 in January. So Yeah, they're improving a ton, but they're getting. I was joking around the other day, like hitting with. We are up here in Destin, near Destin, Florida, and there's another family here. They have two kids, similar ages. They also play pickleball, and I'm gonna work them out today a little bit. But I'm always trying to do stuff with the kids. Like, it's my main focus, right? Like, just the big picture thing. Like, it helps me so much because I'm worried about my game, but I'm also like more focused on their game and trying to get them better and just. I really want them, I feel like that's going to be the goal for me is like just getting them, better and better at pickleball. And, they're getting to the point now where like we're going to be able to train together in a few years and play together and,
Yeah.
potentially be able to play tournaments together. And just the thought of that is just so cool and exciting for us.
Yeah, it's just
So,
doing the
but
math
yeah,
in my
I'm like,
head. It's like you at call it 48 and JR at 16. Like that's a formidable duo right there.
Yeah, that's gonna. I mean, the way he's playing right now, he's getting so much better. I was playing some kitchen battles with him yesterday, and like, he's just, learning. I've taught them a lot, but they're also pickleball is so cool too because I feel like tennis is a lot more technical, but
Yeah.
pickleball is a lot more like, I don't know if you'd say organic or just the things that you learn. It's very like, like I don't. There's a lot of stuff that he's learning that I'm not telling him, and
Yeah,
he's kind of like
there's no
learning
right
by
way.
watching. Exactly. He's learning by watching. He has kind of a funky game. You've seen him play a little bit. He's very good with both hands. I've done a lot of stuff developing both their hands, like dinking with both hands. He started with two hands on both sides in tennis. And it's cool because they both started with tennis, right? So they started with the foundation of tennis for a few years, and now they're pretty much all pickleball. We still get on the tennis court. They play badminton. JR loves ping pong. They're playing a ton of racket sports. But I've kind of just been, I mean, this is kind of the coaching part, but I've kind of been trying to develop them as athletes first, right? That's always been my philosophy as a coach, develop the athlete, develop the character of the player, and then, develop their game. JR's right here. JR, say hello. And just develop their
What's up,
game
JR?
after that, right? And then he can't hear you, but he said hello.
Hi.
And
Hey.
but then like, after that it's like the learning becomes so much easier and then you kind of just like let them blossom and watch them pick up all these different things. So it's really that process has been really fun for me as a
It's
coach.
and it's so diff you're right. It's so different than coaching tennis, where it's like this is it's so technical, right? Tennis is so technical to get really good. You have to there's just everything's so nuanced, and there's so many aspects of it. Every stroke has to be worked on from a very technical perspective. And there's not I mean you see some guys. I just saw a video yesterday of who was it? The Australian guy that used to be good that's now not good.
Curious?
No, Bernard.
Oh, Tomic. Yeah, I know. I saw that same video. Yeah. Funky strokes, man.
Funky strokes, but he's got a win over Djokovic. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With those strokes.
He was like, what was he like, top 20 in the world at one point or
Yeah.
top 30? Yeah.
Crazy. And like you see that less in tennis, right? But in pickleball, there's a lot of different techniques, and like you're right, it's very organic, and there's no right way to hit much of anything. Like
Very true.
I can go teach a clinic on how to hit dinks, but then you'll see somebody else hit dinks completely different, and it's still effective.
Yeah.
So it's
Right. It's like
yeah.
you watch like someone like me who I feel like I kind of look like a tennis player, and then you watch like Susanna Barr, right? Like little lot very different.
Very
But
different.
also, but how effective are her dinks and some of her shots, right? So it's like, but that's what makes pickleball so cool. I tell people like obviously there's the cliche statement like pickleball is easy to learn, but it's really hard to master, right? Because there's so many different shots, and I think that's what makes pickleball more fun in some ways in tennis. It's like if it was a video game, like if tennis was a video game, it would be like 10 levels, right? But those levels would like be like so immersive, like it would be like this long storyline. You have to just defeat this crazy boss at the end of each level. Like you have the forehand, the backhand, the serve. Serve would be like level 9 or whatever. Like I feel like teaching the serve is so tough. But if pickleball was a video game, it would be like 100 levels, and like
Totally.
level 1 would be like hitting the making contact. Like level 10 would be like the dink or whatever. Level 37 would be the drop, and then you would get to like Ernie's, ATP, and like it just keeps going and going. And even shots that we're watching now that we're like, what the heck is that? Like it has you like you've never even seen that shot before. And it's just that's what makes it so fun is like there's all I go out on the pickleball court. Like right now I'm learning like two like I've been working on my two-handed dink. And it's like I changed to one hand and backhand of tennis when I was 12. And now I'm having to learn a two hand like I'm a kid again
Yeah.
for the last year. It's like I never thought I'd be doing that, right? It's so
Yeah.
funny. But
Sorry, one sec.
that's right.
Guys. Guys. Be
Pipe down
cool.
back there.
Yeah, be cool. Be cool. Hey, Fan, Munch, come here, guys. There's nobody here, and I think there's like somebody here. Oh,
They
yeah,
heard some
there.
knocking.
No,
I got my dogs.
Mullen just got blocked, so they were just they knew. They should be cool now. All right, sorry about
Tyler said hello.
that. Ryler says hello. Hi, Ryler. Yeah, Jar says hello too. He says he's better than you at pickleball.
He's getting
Oh,
there.
yeah. I'm
Give
scared of JR right now.
him a couple years.
Yeah, no, I believe it. Is he and Lily, are they super stoked on like playing? Like they want to go out and practice and play?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's one of those things like, I mean, it's like one of those things we could talk about for a long time, but I think, yes, they do. They love pickleball. Like they enjoy playing. They both like it more than tennis now.
Yeah.
But they've been playing now for about 3 years. But it's like, do they want to go out and train every day? I don't think so. Like, I think JR likes to play a little bit more than Lily. It's funny though, like Lily, she really enjoys like one-on-one with me. Like she'll hit with the other kids and stuff, but she'll be like, can we do like 30 minutes? Like she likes the individual time with me, like working on stuff. And I
Yeah.
cherish that because I don't know how long it's gonna last.
And
But
but it's fun. So I watched a little bit of that in Newport, I think last year, of
yeah.
you and Lily were like drilling, and you had her like, it reminded me of like tennis drills where somebody's at the net volleying and the other person's just running side to side just until
Yep.
they absolutely can't go any further. And I remember being super impressed with Lily. I was like, man, she's like, even though she's like gasping for air, she's running for every ball. She's like, she has like
Yeah.
that really interesting mentality of not stopping, you know?
Yes. Yeah, she does. It's funny, like I always say my kids are like they're very opposite the way they play. Like JR's super fast and athletic. And Lily is not as fast, but she hits the ball really well. So like she's really dangerous if like you can't make her move and she can like set up and hit, she can rip the ball. She
Yeah.
gets a lot of power and her ground strokes are really good. So JR's really good at the net. He's got really good like weird shots, like weird attacks and stuff. So they're very different players. Like if you could combine them into one player, it'd be like, wow. But yeah, it's interesting because they practice with each other, so that hopefully they're rubbing off on each other a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's plenty of times going back to your other question where like they probably don't want to be out there. But I do feel like, I mean, this is a whole nother thing, but I just feel like the way we are today a little bit, it's like it used to kind of be like, well, you don't want to train. Well, okay. Oh, well, let's go. Like get out there and work hard.
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
we're training today, right? And so now it's a little bit more like, oh, you don't want to train. Well, okay, we don't have to train today. Let's go to the
Yeah.
pool, And I'm not like that. I'm pretty old school still. I'm
Yeah.
only
No,
40, but
I feel the
I'm,
same. It's like,
yeah.
okay,
So,
well, that's
so
how you
some,
get better
yeah.
by doing things you don't want to do.
Exactly. I mean, so I'm like, guys, that's what I'm preaching a lot to them is like, I know you don't want to practice today, but hey, if you want to be great at the sport, which I think they do want to be good because they get in tournaments and they battle. And, what I was going to say is Lily, sometimes she gets tired and she struggles with the heat and stuff like that. But it's funny. If you get her in a tournament, she pushes hard. Like she doesn't want to lose. Like
Yeah.
she has that in her where she doesn't want to lose. And JR too. But it's like, but they, you have to teach them. These are things that, humans, like we don't want to feel pain. We don't want to suffer, right? It's
Yeah.
like, so I feel like my job as a coach and first a dad is I got to build my kids and make them tough, right? Like that's part of
Yeah.
my job. I'm not gonna make soft kids. I'm gonna make them tough, stay hard. And, and so like, that's part of my job as a dad and a coach. And that's how I've been with all my players as a coach is
Yeah.
I'm very fair. I'm respectful. I'm not cussing out there. I'm not raising my voice a lot, but if you work hard for me, we're going to be friends. But if you're not working hard for me, I'm going to push you. I'm not accepting mediocrity out there.
Yeah.
And that's the same for my kids. I expect that for myself. I lead by example. I try to lead by example. When I go out on the court, whether it's practice with no one watching or whether I'm at a tournament playing in the finals of Cincinnati with you, like I'm giving it everything I got,
Yeah.
and there's no in between. Like, it's like, if I'm out there, I'm giving everything I got, and I want my players to do the same. And I think that's fair. So.
Yeah. So is Megan the same in terms of that mentality of kind of building tough kids, or is she more of kind of the nurture motherly figure, that dynamic, or are you guys pretty aligned and they look at both of you as tough?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think sometimes it helps to have a balance, but Megan's also very tough, as you know. She's a heck of a competitor. I mean, there's not many people out there that compete harder than she does, or that want it more than she does. And so I think we're pretty aligned, which I think that's a good thing. We're aligned, but there are times where we have to find the balance, and there's times where I'm a little too much, and then she can kind of come in and make it a little more fun and more nurturing. And then there's times where she can be too tough. And so we both kind of play that role,
Yeah.
a little bit of the good cop, bad cop kind of thing. But I think that's parenting, right? It's like finding that dynamic. But at the end of the day, we both have to be on the same page. We have to be a unified front,
Yeah.
and be aligned on our philosophies. And we want to raise tough, good, but kind, kids, kids that work hard. And we tell them, it's like, we have an easy life, like we travel around, we have everything we need and want and more,
Yeah.
and we play pickleball for a living. And we're not going to sit here on vacation. Like, we're gonna, when we go out and we practice, we're gonna work hard, and we're gonna take this seriously, and we're gonna be professional. We're gonna enjoy it, and we're gonna cherish this gift that we've been given of pickleball, but we're also gonna work hard at it, and we're gonna earn this life that we live, right? We live a
Yeah.
good life. We enjoy some of the finer things of life, but we got to earn it. I'm always about, like, you got to earn it. The
Yeah.
rent is due, like they say. It's not, you don't own it. The rent's due every day, and you got to pay your dues. You got to keep earning it.
I like it.
Hey, have you heard of the new Play More app?
No, what is it?
Basically, the Play More app is like a stress-free scheduling app for pickleballers. So I don't know, we've struggled a lot in group text trying to organize play. You'll set it up and somebody will just like the text. And I'm like, does that actually mean you're coming or not?
Yeah, and it's like you never know how many people you have, like what rating they are. It's kind of annoying.
It can kind of just be a nightmare to
Yeah.
try to organize groups because group texts are just not fun. So basically, the Play More app lets you send out invitations. You get an RSVP list. If somebody doesn't show, there's a wait list that will actually like put somebody right
No
into.
way.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Dang, that's awesome. What's it called?
It's called the Play More app. So you should download it at the App Store, or you can go to getplaymore.com if you want to look at it online.
What's life been like in the RV? How's that adjustment been in terms of, having the family there, having dogs there, the whole thing?
Yeah. Do you want to see
Yeah,
it?
let's do a tour.
Yeah, all right. This iPad's kind of set up like a with JR's Lego box. So let me
So
adjust
this will
this
be
here.
on
But yeah.
YouTube, but it'll also be on the audio podcast. So talk us through it too while you
Yeah,
show us.
so we live in it's a Coachman Sport Coach, 2023 40-foot diesel pusher. So it's got the engine in the back. This is the front right here that you're seeing behind me. There's a top bunk right there that comes down, which I slept on that the other day. We don't typically sleep up there. Lily sometimes will play up there with her toys, with her dolls and stuff. Got some paddles, new paddles up there. I slept there the other day because Megan's mom actually stayed with us. We can sleep quite a few people if we have to.
Yeah.
But that's the front. There's, you can see where you drive. There's two chairs up here. JR's here behind me on the table. We got a pretty nice size TV back there. Jared's working on some Legos. This is where we do our schoolwork. And also the kids are homeschooled. I didn't mention that, but we do Florida virtual. So that's, we could talk about that. It's kind of a balance as well.
Yeah.
We got theater seating here. These chairs both recline out. The front door is right there. And then we have like a full residential fridge, which is nice, in the kitchen. It's a little messy right now. Megan's gone. So with just me and JR, it's
The
a
guys are
bachelor pad
taking
right
over.
now. Yeah, exactly. Microwave. And then you come back here. This is the bedroom. Full bathroom. We have one bathroom in there. You can
So
see
bathroom,
the
shower, the whole
toilet. Yeah,
deal, huh?
shower. Yeah, exactly. And the kids have bunk beds right here. So that's Lily's top bunk, and JR's on the bottom down there. That was one thing we wanted. We started with a 30-foot RV. We have two dogs too. So it was four of us and two dogs in a 30-foot, which we lived in that for about a year, and that got tight. So we decided to upgrade to a 40-foot. There's Max and Lexi right there. Can you see them? Oh yeah, there's Lexi,
yeah. Max. So is that the 10 feet make a big difference? I'm assuming.
10 feet makes a big difference. The bunk beds make a big difference because before we had to like kind of make JR's bed every day, and so just having the bunk beds is really convenient.
Yeah.
This is one big slider that comes out on this side, and then in the bedroom, there's another slide back there. We have a full washer dryer, which is nice. That's only these bigger ones. Yeah, so we can do laundry, all that. We have a TV back here as well. We play Mario Kart on there.
Nice.
Nintendo Switch and stuff. Yeah, but I mean, it's, as you can see, it's good size. It's kind of like a little tiny house or apartment.
Yeah.
There's a door here for the bedroom. You know, so you have, it's almost like two separate rooms with the bathroom and stuff. So it's pretty good size, and it works really well for us. We tow a Jeep as well. So we have that on the road with us. So we're, you know, when we tow the Jeep, we're probably close to like a semi truck length.
Yeah.
So that can be a little tricky driving it, but gotten used to it. So
are you the driver mostly?
I usually drive. Megan can drive. She's good at, you know, she's driven quite a bit, and does a good job, which most people are impressed with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not easy to drive, but you get used to it. You can't reverse if you're towing. So it's like you got to kind of always figure out where you're going, and you need to be able to turn around. And
yeah.
Yeah. So it can be challenging driving it.
So if you miss a turn, you're going to have to just find that route where you can keep going straight
You really got to plan and know where you're going. You kind of figure out like turns, like, okay, I can't go in there. That's tight, you know, and you make adjustments. If you get into a bind, you can take the Jeep off. The reason you can't reverse is because if you're towing the Jeep, we flat tow the Jeep, meaning we don't have to put it on anything. We just hook it up and tow it, put it in neutral. But if you reverse, you'll break the tow bar because it's not meant to do that. So you have to take the Jeep off if you want to do that. So I've gotten into a bind a couple times. You know, like going under a bridge. It happened to me one time. The bridge was like, this was crazy. Like it said it was like 12 feet high, which the RV is like 12 and a half. And so I was like, oh man, and I couldn't turn around anywhere. So I literally had to pull over. Take the Jeep off. Megan had to drive the Jeep. I had to drive the RV, and we were going to like turn around and go. And then these guys were working there, and they were like on site. They were doing construction. They're like, that sign is wrong. Like it's not
like
12
it's 15
feet.
It's fine.
Yeah. It was like literally like 14 feet. I was like, I knew that was high.
But
and so I put the Jeep back on and we went under the bridge and it was fine.
But it's
you don't
want to
take a chance with that.
Oh no! I was gonna say, like, did you know that ahead of time that bridge was there, or you're always on the lookout? I'm assuming for like if you're going,
you're going
under a bridge, you got to be very cautious.
Yes, you got to look at clearance signs. You got to watch out for branches. You know, that's one thing you don't realize when you're driving this thing. It's about 12 and a half feet, and you have two AC units on the top. There's a satellite thing. I mean, if you go under something that's too low, you're gonna knock off your AC units or worse,
brutal
right?
Damage.
And so,
Yeah,
so you got to be careful. I remember Joey Farias talking about,
because
he used to live in a trailer. He pulled it.
Yep.
And I think his wife was driving. I don't know if he was just blaming it on her or what, but like he said he went under like a bridge impasse or something too low and just completely knocked off his AC unit and just done. So
I've heard. Yeah, I've heard. Was this kind of your guys' first time having an RV and kind of doing the RV thing? Because from everything I hear, it's like it's a pretty steep learning curve, and you learn a lot about a lot of things quickly when you start living in an RV.
Yeah, look, it was one of those things. Like we did it. It's been about 2 years now, 2.5 years maybe. I guess 2 years. But yeah, I was a little reluctant at first. Megan, we have some friends that have an RV. That's kind of how we got into it. The guy that I worked for that had the security company, he's had like multiple RVs, and we've always like traveled with them. And the first RV we got, he owned that exact same one. And he was like helping us a ton with like, this is the one you want to get. This is a good starter one. Anything that went wrong with it, he was helping me. I was calling him.
Yeah.
And so that helped a ton. My friend Jamie, who's just super good at that kind of stuff. He's like, I call him MacGyver because this guy can fix literally anything.
Yeah.
So anything that went wrong, like that gave me a lot of comfort to know that I wasn't completely on my own with it.
That's huge.
But yeah, there was so much stuff that you had to learn. You know, and like the tanks, I think the most annoying part is like emptying all the tanks. You have your black tank, obviously, which is your toilet. You have your gray tank, which is every all the other water. You have your water that you have to fill in. Luckily, we have a hose here that we have full water, and then we can empty the gray tank out in the yard here. You know, it's the gray tank is just basically like it's like shower water, dishwater, stuff like that.
How often do you have to kind of empty that?
We if we're showering a lot in here, we try to shower out. You know, usually at the like a club we play at or something like that, but we can shower here. If you're showering, it usually is good for a couple showers, and then you got to empty out the gray tank. Or, you know, you can do the dishes a few times, take a few showers. Also, the washer run, you know, uses gray tank. It's flushing out that water. So
yeah,
it just depends how much you're using that stuff. But typically, when we're here, I empty it out maybe twice a week, you know, and it's at my buddy's place in the kind of in the middle of nowhere. So it's just on the grass and just not a big deal emptying that out. Some places don't allow you to empty out the gray tank, obviously. Then you have to go, you know, hook it up somewhere and do that. But
yeah,
we do the water in the gray, and then we have to drive out. And we try not to use the toilet. You know, we use the toilet when we have to if we're in here. But if we're not in here, we use, you know, go to the bathroom elsewhere. And it just helps that gray tank last a little bit longer. We typically empty that every, I would say, week and a half to 2 weeks if we're, you know, living in it full time. So it's not bad. You know, we have to drive it. There's a place about 10 minutes away that we can empty the black tank. So
are you,
but just, yeah,
I was gonna say, so are you taking it everywhere, or like, what's the situation if you're like, we have Dallas APP and then we have SoCal APP, like, will you guys drive it to Dallas and drive it to California and then back?
Yeah, great question. So when we first got the RV, like I said, 2 years ago, we had that 30-foot RV. We were driving that thing a lot. I mean, we went out to California, I think, three times there and back, maybe went to the Grand Canyon. But I feel like the schedule back then, it was like a little bit easier. Some of the tournaments were kind of like, we had three in California that we back could play. Back to
back, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and then we could like, there was one in Texas and then one, like geographically, it kind of made sense to drive it a lot more. So we were driving to a ton. I would say we drove to like probably 60, 70% of the tournaments that year. This year, unfortunately, we haven't driven it as much. We're going to drive it to all the ones that are in Florida. I would say 8 to 10 hours is kind of the – if I'm driving more than 8 to 10 hours in it, and then for one tournament, it just doesn't make sense, right? Because this one also, like the other one, we could park it sometimes on site because it was 30 feet. This one is just so big. It's 40 feet that it, a lot of times you have to get a campsite anyways, and you're going to pay – anywhere from $30 to $100, depending where you go.
Yeah.
So sometimes it just makes more sense. Gas, it's diesel. It's about $350 to fill up the tank. So it's, you know, gas is a little pricey. I don't know how many hours that will get you. I get about 6 to 8 gallons a mile, depending on
how big is the tank,
towing and all that. I think it's like 70 gallons, maybe, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, I can go, I don't know, 400 miles, 400 or 500 miles on a tank, I guess, something like that. I don't know, maybe more.
Yeah.
But, you know, it adds up. But, you know, when we were driving it a lot, we were saving a lot of money too, because you're thinking about it, you're saving on rental car, flight, you know, food. You can eat food in here. You can do laundry in here. Yeah. And just the convenience of having everything in here that you need, right? It's like kind of your home.
And this is our home, right? You guys are times four on everything. So you get in a flight, it's times
exactly.
four.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's four of us. So, like, for Dallas, unfortunately, we have to fly. Like, we got to buy four tickets. I haven't even bought them yet.
Yeah.
I was just looking at them before I started talking to you. So, buying four tickets for Dallas. And then I don't know. Oh, we do have housing there, which is good. Obviously, if you can get housing, that helps a lot. Yeah. Still got to rent a car, you know. But, you know, just those long one-off trips out West Coast, it's like it doesn't make sense to drive it all the way there.
Yeah,
but we'll be taking it. We'll take it to Boca.
Mm-hmm.
We would have taken it to the fort, but that got rescheduled. The heck! So that messed us up. Threw a little wrench in our plans there.
That's tough timing subject. It's tough timing for the reschedule too. January 15th, which is
It's tough timing for all of us.
Smack dab in the middle of all the Indian stuff going on.
Right, and you know it's like, I mean, we're kind of veering off topic here, but it's like pickleball is going so global. That's the other thing that's kind of related to what we're talking about, because we've often thought about, you know, should we keep the RV, right? Because we're going to be traveling a ton more. We're going to be going more international. Does it make sense to have the RV? The RV is so simple, right? That's what I love about it. I would say the biggest negative I'm a real like you know, functional kind of guy and thinking about efficiency and all that. I love that part of it.
Yeah.
But the biggest downside is they depreciate a lot, you know, money wise. So, you know, like you're going to lose $10,000 to $15,000 a year probably on the value of it. You know, you can get lucky. I got this one on a pretty good deal. And so hopefully I'll make some of that money back when I sell it. But, you know, if you keep it for 3-4 years, it's going down a lot in price and you're just thinking, well, should I be maybe investing in a house, right? If we're going to be traveling a lot more.
Yeah.
So these are all things we think about, but right now we only have the RV and the Jeep, and I like that because it's simple, right?
Simple,
like I had
yeah.
a storage unit for a while, got rid of that, I mean, I literally had Salvation Army come and like clean out our house and everything and just take it all. And I felt like it was hard at first.
Yeah.
And I held on to some stuff. I got a storage unit. But when I finally got rid of it all, I just felt like such a weight lifted off. I was just like, man, this is great. Like just having only this stuff that we need and nothing yeah. else. It feels really good. Right.
Dude, I've got literally four bags. I can fit all of my belongings into four bags.
Yeah, see, that's it's a good feeling.
It's great. You're not held down by anything.
Simple.
You're light, you're flexible. If you want to go travel for a month or two, you can, and you're not worried about anything back at home, really. So
right.
It is a nice feeling, but big props on doing that with having a family of four. That's next level.
Yeah. And we've gotten closer because of it. I mean, you know, it's like we do more stuff together. We have to, right? Because we're closer together. We're all in this small space. You know, we have to get along. We have to work together. And it's been an awesome experience for our family. I can honestly say that. So
you don't have any times where you're like, man, I just wish I had like my own space to go to where I can just have some time to myself.
If I feel that way, I just go outside.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's better, right? It's like, you know, we don't spend enough time outside anymore. And
100%.
So like, if I need some space, I'll go out for a run or whatever. Like when we're staying at some of these places in the RV, like a lot of times we're staying in nice campsites and there's some cool hikes and cool stuff that we can do. And so we're like, all right, we need some space. Let's get out of here. Let's go on a hike. Let's do, you know, it's like, it just forces us to get outside more.
Yeah.
And this is basically where we have a comfortable place. We can sleep and we can live and eat and, you know, play some Mario Kart and do some Legos and stuff and hang out with the kids, but then we can get outside and, you know, it's like, it's the best of both worlds for us. So it's
yeah.
been awesome.
Love that. So transitioning a little bit to a little bit more present day pickleball focused. So there's the landscape's pretty wild, right? You've got Megan who's playing MLP. You've got these Indian opportunities where you have PWR is going to have a team league. You have this World Pickleball League, which is going to have a team league. I think around the same time, you have APP, which has got two tournaments now in January of next year. And then I believe still kind of bummed that they only have, you know, about the same amount of tournaments next year as this year, 12 to 14, something like that. Which causes us to go look elsewhere for playing opportunities, right? Like, which is why we're looking at going international more, going to China, going to India, going to all these different places, Vietnam. What is your guys' outlook in terms of what you're going to do looking at next year?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. As you said, I would love it if the APP would have more tournaments. And would be, you know, we've been very loyal to the APP. We love the APP. We love Ken. We love Jenny. We love, you know, Intersport has done such a great job. Not saying anything negative about the APP, but I do think the one thing that I wish they would do more is just, like you said, have more events. Maybe
yeah.
focus a little bit more on the pro thing. I feel like the PPA is just kind of taking it to the next level a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I feel like the APP needs to keep pushing that. But right now we're just on the horizon of such huge international spread of the game. And it's such an exciting time. I mean, we were in India, you know, playing together there. And, Megan and I have been to India three times this year alone. You know, we've been to China already, went to England for the English Open where you were there too, where we played together again. And just seeing the game spreading like this, it's so exciting. I feel like it's kind of like they're, you know, maybe 3-4 years behind where the US was, right? A couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is the time, right? It's like, I always, my analogy for life is like, the surfer's mentality. My dad is a huge surfer. It's like when you see that big wave, that great wave, you got to ride it, right? You might only get that one chance.
Yeah.
And so like for us, it was like, we got to ride that pickleball wave. 3 years ago, we took a big chance, kind of Megan quit her job. And, you know, 2 years ago, I stopped coaching tennis and we're like, let's just go all in. Right. And so we saw that opportunity and we took advantage. And I feel like right now the next big wave coming is the international side.
Yeah.
And it's like, we got to jump on that. And, Megan and I are really keen on taking advantage of that. And we want to be not just for ourselves, but we also want to be part of spreading pickleball, right? Internationally. It's such a great game. It's changes so many people's lives. And, you and I have seen that in action over in India. I mean, it's how much they love the sport,
it's
how much
so fun.
It's bringing, it's bringing people together over there. I don't think there's,
so happy when we play with them too. Like they're
so happy. They love it. You know, there's a lot of kids playing over there. I think the kids are even more interested than over here sometimes, which is interesting. Yeah. But I don't think there's another sport like it in the world, right? Like I truly believe that pickleball is the greatest sport in the world. I really do. And people can say what they want. I don't really care what they say. From my experience, like I could care less what people think and what people say. The proof is in the pudding. And pickleball is right now one of the best sports in the world. It really is. Not because of just the bones and nuts and bolts of the game and how it's played. That alone is awesome. But it's more of what it's doing to the world, the way that it's spreading just, you know, love and like people that are depressed. I mean, how many stories have we heard of people that were like, I've heard of stories of people that were going to take their life, man. Like they were down and out in life and now they're back and they're playing pickleball and pickleball has given them like a meaning to be out there, to doing something. They're getting in shape again. They're, you know, they're meeting people. They're getting outside. It's changing their lives. It's changed our life, our family. I mean, we've gotten so much closer through the sport. I love the sport. I really do. I live and breathe it. I love pickleball. Not a day goes by where I don't think about it or play it. And, you know, I feel like what it's doing right now is it's spreading all over. And, like, we want to be a part of this. And I think you agree. You want to be a part of just spreading this awesome game all over the world. Like, that's where we're at right now. And we're at the cusp of doing that. And it's such an exciting time for us all to be able to do this. Like, we're so blessed and fortunate to be this time, right?
100%.
Like this, like I think there's so many people that'd be like, wow, like I saw this funny meme, like, you know, don't be upset about this and that or whatever. You happen to be born like during the time of pickleball. Like I think it's cheesy, but it's true. Like I'm 40. I'm sometimes like, man, I wish I was like 25, but hey, like I'm here, you know? And like, and it's like, man, this is just such an amazing time to be a part of this sport. Like we're so lucky. So.
Yeah. And it's, like you said, it's still such early days internationally. And like, there's such a hunger and a demand for people like us and players like us to go over and help grow the sport and get people interested. And like, it blows my mind. Like when we go to India to see, like you said, the kids and how talented some of the kids are, like they are playing all the time. Like they're devoting, you know, their childhood to playing pickleball and they love it so much. And then they get to play with us and they're so stoked. And there's, I just think what's happening internationally is going to blow people away. And I talked to Steve Kuhn last week for a few minutes just to catch up and see how he's doing. And his opinion is that this, you know, looking at all of the tours and organizations that are out there right now, kind of running the pro scene. He thinks the story's not finished. He thinks there's going to be probably some really big hitter in China or Dubai or India that's going to come in with really, really deep pockets and probably do their own thing. I think it's still such early days and there's so much opportunity for not just kids, but for, you know, call it ex tennis players that finish college and anybody that it's just such an exciting time where you could still get good pretty quickly and still make a living off hitting a wiffle ball.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, like if people would have asked us a couple of years ago if we would be doing this right now, I'd be like, you're crazy. Like what?
No chance.
It's insane. But I think Steve's right. I mean, I have so much respect for him. He's the godfather of pickleball. I mean, he's the creator of MLP. still probably the best product on the market in pickleball. I mean,
yeah, agreed.
They got to figure things out. When he left, they lost a lot. Not just, you know, just his vision, right? I mean, the guy's got
the passion, the vision.
The vision, the passion, you know, those are things that money can't buy, right? And it's like, it's lost that.
Huh?
It has lost that, you know, and hopefully they'll figure it out. Megan's really enjoyed playing this season. Not to get off topic, but, you know, Virginia Beach, I think, wasn't great. She said, you know, it's like, you don't want to be one of those people that complain all the time. I mean, we're playing pickleball for a living. We're certainly not those people. Like, we're grateful for everything, but it's like, there was a challenger only event and they just didn't do a good job, you know, with the, they didn't have enough stuff for the players. There wasn't that many fans. And it's like, if MLP wants to keep thriving and doing what they're doing and go back to the vision that Steve Kuhn saw in it, they got to, you know, they got to figure some stuff out. But, but maybe that's going to be a league that's all over the world, right? Like an MLP type league. Like, what's stopping that? I mean, they're going to do something like that in India.
Yep.
Like you said, there's stuff we don't even know about that hasn't happened yet. So, the international side is super exciting. It's like this new thing that, like you said, there, I mean, how many billion people are there in the world? There's 2 billion in India and 2 billion in China.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg with this stuff. It's going to get huge over there. And like you said, you know, they need people like us that want to help spread that game. And we want to do that, right? Like we want to help take pickleball all over the world. And I think it's just a super exciting time for us to be in, and hopefully we can take advantage of that and thrive.
It's such a win-win. It's like, we get to travel and experience new places and cultures and, you know, help grow something that we love. And how cool is it for your kids to be able to go to all these different places at their age? Is insane.
Yeah, like, it's amazing. You know,
they're going to have, they've got to be some of the, most traveled kids in the world.
Yeah. I mean, they've been to China, India, England, you know, Megan's from Germany. They've been all over. I mean, it's like, but yeah, pickleball is giving us this vehicle to travel in and see the world through pickleball. It's amazing. So
yeah,
we just have to keep, like I said, we got to keep working hard, you know, and part of it is like, obviously, you know, people want to get paid and they want to make money.
Yeah.
But we also want to keep giving, like, we got to keep giving back to the game that's given us so much, right? It's like, that's why one of my main focuses, whenever I see kids, like, I'm playing with them. We do some free kids clinics. Like, we're really big on youth pickleball. Obviously, we have 2 kids that are under the age of 10, and we want to help spread the love of pickleball through the children too. I think that's one of the most important things you can do, right? It's just put a smile on a kid's face, and pickleball does that instantly. It's such a fun way to do that.
So outside of competing and playing for you and Megan and the kids as well, do you guys have any other, call it, irons in the fire in terms of, you know, growing a business outside of that? Or is it pretty much solely focused on the playing aspect right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now we're very focused on playing. We do teach as well. I wouldn't say it's like a main focus for us, but we do clinics. We offer clinics. I'm going to start coaching a little bit up here when I'm in town, when I'm home. I mean, we're mostly focused on playing. I'm 40. Megan's 36. We both still play singles. Megan might not play singles this weekend. We'll see. It's just tough physically, you know, playing all 3 events, obviously. I think we at some point may focus a little more on doubles. I might still play singles. I just like getting out there. You know, I like the Rafa Hewitt trying to ruin someone's day, like he says. I'm trying out there, beat some young kid. But no, we definitely want to be involved in as many things as we can. Megan is doing some consulting stuff. She started a website. It just got launched a few days ago. She's done a phenomenal job with that. She's been blogging, cool, doing that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I think she's really trying to build her brand, which she's done a great job. She has a great brand. Our family, I feel like, is also a brand that we're trying to, you know, build a little bit. And we just want people to kind of, like, you know, see our journey, and hopefully we can inspire others to do stuff that we've done. And then, like I said, just giving back. And I love coaching. I'm a coach at heart, super passionate about coaching, helping other people attain their goals, especially juniors. So I could see a world where I would be maybe doing some type of junior program like I did in the past. I ran a high performance junior program actually with Megan after I played pro tennis for a few years. So that stuff I'm really passionate about. But I'm going to compete as long as I can. I mean, as long as these knees stay hold up and my legs can move, and
yeah,
I'm going to keep competing. I love it. It's part of who I am. But it's going to be really fun for me to kind of probably transition a little more towards coaching and consulting and advising, and then also focusing more on my kids too. But you know, I could see doing a lot of different things. I think I would, you know, potentially be okay at commentating, you know, I know, you know, doing stuff like that. I feel like, I would love to do some stuff like that. I haven't really done any of that stuff because I don't put myself out there very much, but I'd be open to doing different things like that. So I think we're constantly looking at different opportunities that we can get involved in, and you know, anything that's pickleball, we're in. So we love it.
Love it. So we'll kind of wrap it there. Where can people find more of your social content? Where can they find Megan's website? And we'll put all this in the description, but would love to hear where we can.
So I think mine's like just at Ryler DeHart on Instagram. That's basically all I have right now. I'm huge on Instagram. You know, I have like over 3,000 followers. So just a huge force on there.
When you do post, it's absolute gold. So we need more.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Trying to go off the coattails of David Goggins. I'm like the Goggins pickleball guy. You know, stay hard.
Yeah.
Megan just launched her website. It's Megan Fudge, like the chocolate, PB, like pickleball. So MeganFudgePB.com. She's got some good content on there. You can subscribe to her newsletter, which I already did. And she's doing a blog. She does a couple a week, I think. And so you can, and our family's kind of on there too. So you can kind of follow us on her website and her social media as well. She's, I think, the official Megan Fudge. She has a bigger following, probably just because she's better looking than me. But those are kind of where you can check us out and follow our journey as a family. So
love it. Well, thank you for.
Oh, Lily and JR have one too.
Yeah, let's hear it.
But we don't post that much, but I think it's like Lily_JR. You can find, if you put Lily JR DeHart on Instagram, you'll find them there too. We got to do a better job of posting on that.
Yeah. But now they're the playing time
all
for the them.
Tournaments we're playing. I know they're playing all the ATPs and
love it.
Nationals and everything. So
they're on the come up. Well, thank you for joining Behind the Paddle. Appreciate learning more about your story pre pickleball and what you guys are doing as a family. Very cool. And we'll do an update probably this time next year.
Sounds good. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me on the podcast, and all the best.
Thanks, Ryler.
Stay hard.
Stay hard. Ryler to Goggins.